Hello, business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives. Welcome to today's Business Radio, a new hybrid radio show that airs both on air as well as online and on demand. We discuss all the topics relating to your business. Today's Business Radio interviews experienced business advisors to help you build enterprise value, improve profitability, and plan for your eventual exit. Whether you're an entrepreneur just starting out, a seasoned business owner, or a top-level executive, today's Business Radio will help you achieve your personal and professional goals. Today's Business Radio is available around the clock, around the world, online, and on demand at todaysbusinessradio.com. Now, the host of today's Business Radio, Tom Lyons.
Hello, this is Tom Lyons. I'm here with my co-host, Sam Zurdich, and our producer, Jorgi Jorgensen. Our guest today is John Cameron from the Cameron Law Offices. I practice in the area of business transactions, real estate deals, and commercial litigation. John, thanks for being here today.
Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning.
John, our topic today is a topic near and dear to my heart. It's business acquisitions and sales and the transaction attorney's profile and part in that and those deals.
Well, Tom, I'm glad to be here because it's something near and dear to my heart, too. I've been practicing for a while, and this is an area that we've developed, and we really enjoy working with clients in situations similar to where your clients are, where they're either trying to acquire or sell a business enterprise.
And today we're going to talk about the process of selling a business and how you play a part in that as a transaction attorney. And, John, when we've got a client who wants to sell, one of the first things I like to do is sit down with the transaction attorney and say, all right, John, here's your client. He thinks he wants to sell. What type of entity do we have?
Right. I mean, you know, preparation, as you well know, for any of these transactions is very important. And asking these types of questions early in the process, before you're even to market, is really important. And your question exactly of going to what type of entity, you know, many companies have, I've got companies where they may have formed the company many, many years ago and without thinking brought certain assets into the entity that would really impact the long-term tax implications or what a willing buyer is going to pay for those assets because of the way they've held them. A good example would be real estate. I have clients who've brought real estate into their company. Now, had we been involved early on, we probably would have set up a separate entity to hold assets like real estate because they are unique from the operating entity. So when you're coming in as the buyer, a buyer may look at this and say, hey, I may want to structure this differently than the way you're currently structured. But asking yourself, how is the selling entity organized is the place to start.
So we want to find out, is it a C corporation? Has it elected subchapter S and how many years ago? And is it a limited liability company? What is it? And hopefully you've had control of that corporate minute book for many years, and it's up to date, and we know what assets are there and so forth.
Well, then, you know, Tom, you're touching on really the due diligence component here. You know, the first questions we ask is, what's your structure? We ask from a tax basis. Two, we ask, who's involved here? Who are the owners? Who are the decision makers with regards to we might need to do some restructuring prior to selling the entity? excuse me. Who will ultimately be involved in making the decision? Is the offer they receive sufficient enough to exercise the or to accept an offer? And also beyond owners, there's also the management team that might be critical to the transaction, and there also there might be some non-active participants who also have a very strong voice in whether a transaction should even be commenced or should be finalized.
Kind of those hidden advisors.
Well, they're out there, and you need to identify in the process who is going to be involved and who's going to have input. Because, Tom, you and I have always talked about, as we do these deals, to have the team pulled together, and, you know, the attorney, the accountant, yourself, all the people that are going to be the trusted advisors on this team to make this thing move forward. People have worked their entire lives to put these entities together, and it needs a lot of thoughtful attention to make sure that it's done right. And in that process, we need to know who else they trust as their trusted advisors who may try to influence that process. So the earlier on, you can identify who the decision makers are, who the silent partners are, and any other contributors. That's a really important part of the process.
So we identify whether it's what type of entity it is, and we identify who the team is, and then we get to the corporate governance issues to find out who's calling the shots, who owns the shares, who the directors are, who's in charge, who can make that decision, and what do they have to do to memorialize that decision as part of the sale?
That's right, Tom. I mean, we've run into situations where maybe there's an active owner who's running the business quite aggressively, has received an offer, has gone down the path of negotiating a structure with a potential buyer, has done this all by themselves, call someone like myself in to look over the documentation, only to find out that there is a shareholder who has long since retired, maybe a family member, someone else like that who is maybe out of town during the winter. When they come back, all this work has been done to find out that really doesn't align with what they would like to do. They're not ready to do it. So it's really important to know who those decision makers are.
So, can you prevent that, though?
Well, I think you take a look at the stock records, don't you, and see who the significant equity holders are?
Well, most controlling or active owners who have the day-to-day control of the business, they'll disclose that to you. There's certain assumptions they make that they feel as though that person might be on, and that person might be in the loop, but may not be clearly communicating what their expectations are.
John, isn't it really a case of if you've got a corporation, the shareholders or the equity holders elect the directors, and then the directors appoint the president and the operating officers and so forth. But at the end of the day, the shareholders really have the authority to call the shots.
That's true, yes.
Okay, so now we found out the entity, and we found out the control of the entity. The next thing would be to identify what kind of assets are going to be transferred at the sale.
And this is really important, Tom. There's a certain amount of due diligence that you hop in the shoes of the buyer. What are they going to want to know? They're going to want to know, basically, who are the customers? What assets do you have? What liabilities do you have? Who's on your team that they may want to retain? And in that process, things need to be looked at, like we talked about real estate earlier. There may be a personal property in the business. Do they own their real estate? Do they lease their real estate? We recently did a transaction with a Fortune 500 company acquiring one of our clients who was leasing at a property. That particular property didn't have any environmental issues. There were no problems with the property. However, a phase one, which is a preliminary investigation of environmental issues on a piece of real estate, disclosed that there was a environmental issue not on this property but on a neighboring property. And because of that, the acquiring entity did not want to close the transaction until our client had relocated out of that building into their facility.
Because there's a potential environmental claim.
In our minds, it was a fairly remote potential liability. But it got us into the mindset of, well, how do we structure this so that, okay, we're going to move in with you, but we're not going to have closed at that point.
Sure.
So it created some issues where we had to create some assurances in the document that the transaction would go forward, that it would be funded. However, that's a situation that we make certain assumptions like, well, we've been here for years, there's no problems, we can sell the business. But as you go into these transactions, buyers look at these things much differently, especially if you're selling to a publicly held company, which is going to be scrutinize the transaction much more heavily.
John, it seems to me that the point we're after here is to get off to a good start. Seems like in every deal in the last 30 days, there's a frantic push to find vehicle titles, to find something. And one of the things that's always worked for me is if I can start with the transaction attorney the first day by identifying what assets have to be transferred and doing things like title checks and check for defects and check for liabilities and so forth, then you can get way ahead of that so that it's not so frantic at the end.
Right, we'd work with the client like you would to put a checklist together of all the things that the entire world and walk through that with them. Some of which, and many of which, may not apply to their situation. However, many of them will, and things need to be brought up to date. The worst thing in the world is to have the buyer ask continually making rounds of requests for information. We're in this business. We know what they want. And if there's bad news in there, we should identify it. We should either figure out how to solve it, or we should figure out how to explain it to the potential buyer as to why it's not a problem.
So if they own real estate, you do stuff like a title check early to see if there's anything that needs to be cleaned up?
Absolutely. Any asset, you know, we need to find out what type of title issues they are, whether it's real estate, whether it's a plant, you know, equipment in the plant. You know, I'm sure the company probably has an operating line that's secured, and there's a record of that, UCC filings. So we need to know, when you're going to buy a company, you want to take that company clear and free of all liabilities. So you need to identify what the liabilities are. In addition to, you know, a lot of people look at, love to own that asset, but that asset may potentially have liabilities that need to be identified and addressed before it's transferred.
Give me an example of like a showstopper on that.
Well, we recently were in a due diligence situation where a company basically identified that it had certain assets and that those assets were generating a certain amount of income. And we were able to identify, you know, based on their pro forma of what those were. However, in due diligence, we ended up asking for verification over a certain period of time of copies of receipts or the actual receipts from the prospective seller. And in that situation, we were able to disclose that the numbers that were being disclosed were really more of a projection than an actual, than a historical.
So they were inflated.
Right, exactly. And in that, we found out that the assets, also the liabilities attached to the underlying assets, exceeded what had been previously disclosed.
It could be something as simple as finding vehicle titles and determining whether or not there's a bank lien on those as well, right, John?
Right. Absolutely. Any asset of the company.
So if you can identify the assets to be transferred at the end, early in the transaction, you can get out ahead of that so that you don't have to do a frantic search for those things and try to get lien waivers and try to get banks to sign off and try to get mortgage satisfactions, those type of things.
That's right. And in these times, you know, we're doing some situations where there might be a sale of an asset that is selling below its the lien against it might be. And those are conversations that need to be discussed primarily with the lender before you can go out and try to do this transaction, because you can't strike a deal unless you can deliver the asset.
And the earlier they do them, the better.
Correct.
So now we've talked about the type of the entity. We've talked about the governance issues. We've talked about identifying the assets to be transferred to close. Now we need to have a discussion about, should this be an asset sale or should it be a stock sale? And at this point, you probably need to have a conversation with the CPA to talk about the taxable nature of the entity and the structure of the sale.
And that's always the competing interests here of buyers and sellers. Sellers always just want to sell their stock, and you just take the company. We've been running it to this point. It's very simple. You just buy my stock. Buyers always want to present it as, we only want to buy your assets. We don't want anything to do with your liabilities.
Let's take a look at that. If you're representing a buyer and you're looking at a company that's been around 30 or 40 years, what's your first and best advice going to be?
Well, it's going to be, if I'm representing the buyer, I'm going to say this is going to be an asset sale.
And it's an asset sale because of liability issues?
Well, there's a ton of liability issues, and then there's also very important tax issues that would impact, you know, your potential ability to write assets off going forward. Because when you buy, if you buy the company, the stock, you basically just hop in the seller's shoes, and maybe he's owned a building for 50 years and maybe have, at that point has depreciated it down to zero. However, if you come in and buy that plant and that equipment, you're going to be able to reestablish with the assistance of your accountant what the appropriate, what they call it, your basis in the property is going to be, and then you can start your own depreciation off of that. So there's really two components driving this. Doing an asset purchase versus a stock purchase, one of which is you don't know what the history is. You obviously need to do a great deal more due diligence if you're going to buy the stock to avoid the potential liabilities. And the second is there are significant tax implications to doing a stock purchase over an asset purchase.
When it comes to allocating the purchase price and restarting the depreciation.
Correct.
But the first issue is the liability issue, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what I've heard over and over again, and I'm just a lowly broker, is that if you buy the stock of a corporation, you are potentially liable for everything that has been done since that corporate or since that entity was formed. And a buyer's attorney is going to say, let's form a new entity, let's buy the assets, then you don't have that liability for whatever may or may not have happened during the life period of that entity. Is that correct?
Tom, that's right. You have a situation where just to be clear, the entity that you're buying, if you bought the shares in that entity, the entity would continue to have those liabilities. So, or some undisclosed liability. So when we say you would have it, you're basically buying the corporation that you might think has a certain amount of equity or a certain amount of income, and that would be drastically impacted by some unforeseen liability that wasn't disclosed during due diligence.
And therefore you have the doubt and the lack of confidence that you can go in there and run that business going forward because you don't know what might have happened before.
Correct.
But today there are some things you can do to offset part of that liability and get a buyer comfortable enough to at least consider a stock purchase. And some of that's like tail insurance.
You can do insurance. You can do escrows. You can negotiate if you can get a good enough buy to make you feel like you've potentially compensated for any risk. But these, you know, each one of these. Now we're talking about how you know at what level of security do you want? We've gone from doing an asset purchase, where most lawyers would be advising their client that they feel very comfortable with that. And now we're starting to talk about, well, if something comes up, and a lot of times with my clients, I like to tell them, there's always this conversation where we're saying to ourselves, here's what we're going to do. And then the conversation transfers over to another conversation that says, in the event we're sued, here's now going to be our potential defenses, the tail insurance, we've escrowed for it, these types of things. And I always point out to the client, do you know the conversation just changed from not putting ourselves in a situation of we're in some litigation to a new conversation where we're saying, when and if we get sued, here's how we're going to defend.
So tail insurance, it's like cover yours?
It keeps your liability insurance open indefinitely in case there was a claim for something that happened while the seller owned the business.
Okay.
So that the insurance was there and will still defend you, essentially, correct, John?
Yeah, and that would be with regards to any potential like negligence type claims. But some of the other things we'd be concerned about is, you know, some potential income tax liabilities or sales tax liabilities or unemployment or workers' comp type of situations. Mm. So, you know, if it were something we could insure for, that would cover us, but then we need to also be concerned about these other potential issues out there.
Okay, we're getting sidetracked a little bit into these liability issues, and it's something I think we could talk about for hours, but let's get back to the CPA. In a perfect world, at the beginning of the transaction, we've identified the entity, we've identified the governance issues, we've identified the assets, we've got the attorney on board, now the CPA is going to come up and say, in a perfect world, you're a subchapter S corporation, you have been for 10 years, you can go ahead and sell the assets or the stocks, we don't care how you structure it. Or maybe it's a C corporation and you've got that double tax issue and now you really want to try to go for a stock sale. We need to get that input from the CPA about what are the tax issues and here's the best direction to try to negotiate the deal and then let's see what happens with the buyers. Is that how that works?
Well, again, you're getting back to who's on the team, and the accountant is critical to have on this team to advise us on not only the structure, but how have some of these depreciation issues been looked at. And many times, as you know, Tom, when you go in and look at a closely held company, you know, there's a lot of recasting of financials. A buyer may come in and feel they can run the business more efficiently when they adjust for maybe a highly compensated owner's salary. So the accountant for setting value, identifying the structure, and figuring out you know, what adjustments need to be made and where these potential liabilities might lie is very critical to have that person involved in the discussion.
And some serious input as the taxable nature of the structure. And if you go one way, it might be less expensive than the other way. And here's what to watch out for when you're allocating the purchase price later on.
Right. And that needs, those numbers all need to be run to see what the best outcome ultimately can be and what dollar value the company can be sold at to come out at the same. You might end up with different sale prices and end up at the same spot.
Interesting part of this so far is we've talked all this time and we haven't even gotten started on a deal. We've just talked about identifying the deal and what's the perfect way to do the deal and putting the attorney on the transaction attorney on the team and the CPA. Now I get started and I go out and find multiple buyers and we try to negotiate the deal the way that from the input that you've given me and the CPA's given me and the seller's given me. And then we bring in the outline of a deal, and we keep you informed all the way, and all of a sudden we've got buyers with letters of intent. Now the sellers come to you and say, okay, John, I've got these letters of intent. Where do we go from here?
You know, the devil's always in the details, and you know, we're talking about documenting a deal, and you're right, Tom, that usually the first step in the process is to receive a letter of intent. And you know, in most cases, a letter of intent is it's basically an agreement to agree. However, you know, clients
usually non-binding.
The principal terms of the agreement are non-binding, but the perception is that they're always. That all of the letter of intent is non-binding. However, there may be binding portions of these letters of intent that if the parties, they may lay something out like there's a no-shop provision. We're going to enter into this letter of intent, and for 90 days, you're not going to try and sell it to somebody else. You're only going to let us look at it. There may be provisions with regards to the disclosure of financial and other confidential information, which will be binding beyond the letter of intent. So letter of intents are usually an agreement to agree with respect to the sale, but people need to be cautious that there typically are provisions that they will be obligated to be bound by even beyond the expiration of the due diligence or the letter of intent period.
So you like to see a letter of intent fairly detailed, and it's kind of the roadmap to start drafting a purchase agreement, is that right?
The next step, once we enter into the letter of intent, is we go to the purchase agreement. And again, this is something that would contain all the details of, are we doing a stock purchase? Are we doing an asset purchase? What are going to be the settle-ups? You know, you've got a moving target here. You've got a company that ideally has money coming in, and it's got payables going out, and it's got employees and payroll. So you need to have a mechanism within there to make sure that all those can be settled up as of the date of the sale.
Can you give us some typical provisions of a purchase agreement? This is going to be the document that binds the deal. This is the deal, right?
You know, typically, after we've identified the assets are going to be transferred, we identify the date that it's going to be closed, we identify there's going to be warranties and reps with regards to the way the business has been run, with regards to its financials.
Okay, let's stop there. Warranties and representations. What is that, John?
Well, the seller, you know, buyer is going to require a seller to make a significant number of warranties and representations, which are basically affirmations by the seller regarding the condition of the business and the assets of the business. So they may attach most current years of tax returns, a most current income and loss statement, a P&L, and a balance sheet. And they also say, okay, identify all the assets which are going to be transferred. They're going to say, well, we own those assets, and the date of closing, they're going to be free and clear of all liens, and we're going to transfer good title to those to you at closing. You might see provisions with regards to the principals either not competing for a significant period of time, and beyond the non-competes when you sell a business are typically longer than they are in an employment situation. There might be provisions about not only won't you compete for a period of time, you also won't solicit any of the former clients for a longer period of time, and you also won't solicit and hire any of the employees of the company. You know, this buyer really wants some assurance that if they pay you all this money, they're not going to be competing with you
You're not going to go out and rebuild another entity.
Right.
Sell it to them and set up, hang out your shingle across the street and say, we're going to do this again.
Yep.
That wouldn't work very well, would it?
Right.
So you're talking about really a series of agreements, a purchase agreement, a non-compete agreement, maybe a consulting agreement. If they're leasing the real estate, a leasing agreement. There could be a lot of agreements and a lot of documents to document the transfer of assets.
That's right. And we recently did a transaction with a closely held family interest that where the employee or where the two key family members who were running the business ended up getting employment agreements in addition to selling their assets to the corporation, or the assets were sold in the corporation. They at the closing also signed employment agreements to go to work with the new entity with an understanding that their compensation would be a certain amount, that they would have an expectation of a certain length of employment, and if they were let go at any time in the future, they would be paid for an additional period of time.
So, John, it sounds like part of the thing you're trying to do if you're representing a seller is to make sure that there aren't any outstanding liabilities hanging over after the deal is closed that they might be responsible for and missed that really a buyer should be responsible for going forward. And with your experience, you know where most of those traps are, and you can try to close off those liabilities.
That's right, Tom.
Well, and I'm looking at this now from the seller's point of view or owner's point of view, not even as the seller. It's just, this is a lot of work. I mean, at what point do I start looking, once I've got the idea in my head that it's time for me to sell, or I want to, when do I bring you on? When do I bring on the team? How do I do that? I mean, I'm looking at this thinking, some of these I could probably do, or at least get started on.
Well, Sam, you're looking at kind of a short list of bullet points of things that we like to think about going into these deals. If you were came to my office and sat down and said, I'm thinking about selling my business, I would pull out an outline, which we don't like to send to someone because...
More work.
Way more detail than this. Way more detail.
It's 20-plus pages of things. Now, they don't all apply, but we like to work through with the client and say, this isn't going to apply, this isn't going to apply, but then say, here's the things we need to do, and who on the team is going to be responsible for chasing these things down. And just that one conversation, a person can get that around their, you know, get their mind around. But Tom, I think you know this is true. We work with clients who know that they want to sell their business, and they don't want to sell it next week. They might want to sell it in 3 or 5 years, and we're working with them all along saying, okay, when you get to that process, here's what the things that we're going to need to have in order for you and you can't get it together in 6 weeks because people are going to, the due diligence process is going to require us to produce items from 6 years.
That's why we like to start way early.
Yeah,
and it's just like our practice. What are the value drivers of your business when you go to sell it? How can we make it look better to a buyer? How can we make a buyer feel really comfortable so that they pay a big price and they pay a large down payment? And if we can get started, if you have those conversations with your clients 2, 3, 4 years in advance and say, this is the process you're going to go through, let's get ready. And then once we start trying to market the deal, we've got to make sure John's identified the assets, he's ready, we've talked to the CPA, they've given us their input, now we can go to work. While we're working, you're getting ready to do the things you need to do to close the deal.
But it sounds like there's even this whole long period of hard work and process before even getting it to the marketing portion. That's what I'm hearing as a...
When you market a business for sale, it could take from 6 months to a year to close a deal, depending on how fast you can find a buyer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that gives, if John's done his work with clients for several years in advance, that gives you adequate time to do the things you need to do to get to the closing and transfer assets, doesn't it, John?
Yeah, I think that's right. But going to your point, Sam, I think that one of the things that to keep in mind is we have clients who sell their business all the time who maybe just got an offer. We pull these things together. We get it done. I think Tom's point and the point that I'm trying to make is that you may be leaving some value on the table.
Okay.
If you're not, or you're basically giving the buyer the stick to beat you over the head with when you can't adequately address all the issues that a competent, well-equipped buyer is going to bring to your attention.
So what is the due diligence time frame then?
Well, the due diligence can take as long as the parties want to negotiate based on the complexity of the deal. But ultimately, you know, it's going to be maybe a 60 or 90-day period, and they may want to extend that and depending on what we run into.
We can talk about due diligence another time. That's a big subject. Any final thoughts on the business acquisitions and sales, John?
Well, I just think that it's an area where we're going to see a lot of folks in certain age brackets who are going to want to now make a transition, whether that's to an outside seller or to someone internally in their business. You know, some of these businesses require them to grow a person who's internally mature, someone who can take over this business, and we've done a number of those. Whether it's family or a key employee, you need to identify that person, bring them along, set the structure up so you can execute on it. But, those are my thoughts. Spend some time on the front end to figure out what your strategy is going to be so you can implement these things.
Get out ahead of it as usual.
Right.
Well, this has been a fascinating discussion with some interesting ideas. on the topic of business acquisitions and sales. And I'm Tom Lyons for my co-host Sam Zordich and our producer Jorgie Jorgensen. I'd like to thank John Cameron from the Cameron Law Offices for being with us today on todaysbusinessradio.com.
You've been listening to Today's Business Radio with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the owner of Phelan Partners Limited, an M&A advisory and consulting firm. Today's Business Radio is also available around the clock and around the world at todaysbusinessradio.com. That's todaysbusinessradio.com. All content provided by Today's Business Radio is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal, accounting, and business advisors. Today's Business Radio is not liable for the contents of this podcast, nor does it endorse any commercial product or service mentioned or advised in this podcast. All radio shows, podcasts, and other content provided by Today's Business Radio is copyrighted and may not be reproduced or downloaded for any reason without prior written consent by Today's Business Radio. If you have a topic you'd like covered at Today's Business Radio, log on to our website at todaysbusinessradio.com and submit your comments and questions. Thanks for listening to todaysbusinessradio.com.